Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on this morning's magazine, we'll hear how young people are at the forefront of efforts to enact change when it comes to the climate crisis. Many young people around the country, including some from right here in Colorado, have been plaintiffs in various different lawsuits that are seeking to affect that change. But a decision by Congress last week may impact those suits. We'll get a report from Ros Brown. Then for Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we'll hear a poem originally broadcast on KGNU about 4 years ago. It's by a Boulder-based poet whose poetry about race is being used by educators across the country to inspire awareness and discussion about race, privilege and class. Then on Resistance Radio, we'll hear from two former graduate students at the University of Denver Corbell School of International Relations. They're asking for debt reduction. In fact, they, along with many other former graduates, have recently written a letter to the dean of the Corbell School. This is all in the wake of the school reducing fees for current graduate students. After headlines from the BBC, we'll get a commentary from Jim Hightower. Then on a public affair in honour of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we'll hear about a new project from Motus Theatre that will be performed this evening at the Dairy Centre for the Arts in Boulder. This morning, we'll hear from someone who has spent time in prison here in Colorado. They're going to be performing their own personal monologue, their story, as part of the Just Us, Stories from the Front Lines of the Criminal Justice System Project. At 9 o'clock, it is media analysis from Counterspin, rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
The United States Supreme Court announced on Friday that it will review a Colorado case that could have major effects on how the Electoral College chooses the next president. The case stems from 2016, when three Democratic electors in Colorado tried to vote for Republican John Kasich to prevent Donald Trump from receiving the 270 Electoral College votes required to become president. The electors had been instructed to cast their votes for Hillary Clinton, who won Colorado's popular vote. Two of the electors backed down, and the Denver Post reports that the third, Michael Baca, did not. He was replaced by then-Secretary of State Wayne Williams. After that, the electors filed a lawsuit challenging the removal. A federal appeals court ruled in August that the state's removal of Baca as an elector and nullification of his vote were both unconstitutional. The nation's high court will consider whether that ruling was correct in what is now called the Faithless Electors case. Baca said that they are thrilled the Supreme Court will take up his case and look forward to an historic day in the court. Most states, including Colorado, have laws that bind the electors to choose the winner of the popular vote in that state. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser, a Democrat, said that he thinks the restrictions on electors are constitutional. Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, also a Democrat, said that unelected, unaccountable electors shouldn't be allowed to decide the presidential election without regard to the voters' choices and state law. However, lawyers for the electors say the power to appoint them does not imply a power to control them. It's likely the Supreme Court will hear arguments in the case in April and then decide it before its session ends in late June. Events are scheduled all across the state today to celebrate Martin Luther King Jr. Day. In Denver, the annual Marade, a march and parade, is expected to draw 30,000 people to walk the route from the King Memorial at City Park to Civic Center. Also this year in Denver, the local Black Lives Matter 5280 and the Colorado Poor People's Campaign will hold a protest event at City Park beginning before the Marade. In Longmont, an event called All Cultures, One Voice is set to start at 10 this morning at Silver Creek High School. In Boulder, a march hosted by the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center will be held from 2 to 4 this afternoon, starting at St. John's Church on Pine Street, ending at the Dairy Arts Center. At CU Boulder, a celebration begins at 3 this afternoon at the Glenn Miller Ballroom at the University Memorial Center. And in Lafayette, Democratic Representative Joe Neguse is set to speak at an event starting at 11:30 at Angevin Middle School. The 4th Annual Women's March was held on Saturday in downtown Denver. Organizers of the event estimated that about 10,000 people were there. The Denver Post reports that while the crowd was much smaller than the first march in 2017, It was no less passionate, as the coming election brought a sense of urgency reflected on signs carried and chants shouted. Attendees proceeded around the Capitol building and then to an indoor event called the Impact Expo at the McNichols Building. For the first time, the march did not offer a rally for politicians and candidates to make speeches. Organizers put the focus on long-term action and connecting people to political causes, nonprofit organizations, and other groups. The emphasis at the expo was on reproductive rights, climate change, immigration, and voter registration. Women's March events took place in other cities around the state, including Broomfield, where they celebrated the 100th anniversary of women gaining the right to vote. Protesters rallied outside the National Western Stock Show yesterday, calling for an end to animal abuse. An organization called Northern Colorado Animal Save says that animals go through cruel and barbaric practices for entertainment purposes. The protesters gathered both to educate and to encourage compassion. One of them told CBS4 that she would like to see an end to rodeos because they basically bully innocent animals that have no ability to fight back. The Boulder City Council focused on new strategies to reduce homelessness on Saturday as it sets its work plan for the rest of the year. The Daily Camera reports that the council placed four new projects on its to-do list, ranging from making emergency communication teams to expanding the city's authority to demolish derelict buildings. The main emphasis, though, was on how the city can improve its effort at tackling homelessness. Councilmember Rachel Friend requested a look into whether they could designate spaces where people live in cars could park overnight or camp without receiving a ticket for violating the city's urban camping ban. Councilmember Mark Wallach said he had heard from people who are feeling uncomfortable or threatened by homeless encampments and added that the council has to find a proper balance as they try to reduce homelessness and move people into housing. A majority of the council expressed support for clearing encampments after a lengthy notice is given to people living in them and social service providers can be available to offer help at the same time. Today's weather will see mostly sunny skies with highs near 50, and tomorrow mostly cloudy with the high around 53. Right now it's about 25 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. Supporters of a climate change lawsuit brought by a group of young Americans against the federal government say that the case is far from over. This is despite a federal court ruling that the plaintiffs did not have legal standing for their landmark case. KGNU's Ros Brown says that the lawsuit was filed by nearly two dozen young people 5 years ago.
The young people who took the federal government to court to force action on climate change say they'll continue their battle despite a federal court ruling against their 2015 lawsuit. As co-counsel for the plaintiffs, Phil Gregory says the judges agreed the youths brought compelling evidence that action is needed to prevent injuries from climate change.
And we believe, had this case gone to trial, there's even a more compelling record that the federal government is harming American citizens and that federal courts should step in.
The judges ruled 2-1 last Friday that Congress or the executive branch, not the courts, are the places for action. Gregory finds that argument unconvincing because the kids who will be affected by future climate change can't vote and don't have political power.
To say, oh, go to Congress or go to the executive branch and get them to do something, I mean, that's just a hollow gesture. Because the youth of America can't do that.
The decision came in the lawsuit Juliana versus United States, and it reverses an earlier district court ruling that would have let the case go forward. Gregory says the 21 plaintiffs, now between ages 12 and 23, are seeking no monetary damages. Instead, they want a court order that the federal government address actions that cause global warming, such as fossil fuel emissions that exacerbate the climate crisis.
The evidence we have shows that since the 50s and the 60s, the federal government has known that if it continues to perpetuate and enable national fossil fuel energy system, that within this time frame, the 2020 to 2050, our nation will face a climate crisis of apocalyptic proportions. And those aren't my words. Those are words of the Nixon White House.
He says it's disturbing that the young people bringing the lawsuit are trying to save their lives, their liberty, and the nation, and now find themselves rebuffed by the federal judiciary, who he says didn't apply the principles of checks and balances.
What's troubling is the fact that the federal judiciary feels that it cannot check the policies and actions of the other two branches when the evidence clearly shows that these policies and actions are harming American citizens.
Gregory adds that plaintiffs will file a petition for a rehearing before the full Ninth Circuit Court by the end of January, but the court isn't required to consider it. The 5 years since the lawsuit was filed have been the hottest years on record. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
Norma Johnson is a Boulder-based poet, an educator, and an artist, and her poetry about race is being used by educators around the country to inspire awareness and discussion about race, privilege, and class. We first broadcast her collection, Poems for My White Friends, about 4 years ago on KGNU, and this morning we're going to revisit one of those poems in honour of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day. This morning we'll hear I Can't Believe It.
In response to the series of police murders of black unarmed men, women, and youth, Michael Brown, Tamir Rice, Eric Garner, and may you rest in peace. I can't believe it. That's what some of my white friends are saying. But what if you did? Would that begin to change things? Or might it change you? Your disbelief cost us.
You can find all the poetry that Norma Johnson recorded for KGNU online at news.kgnu.org. Well, coming up later this morning, in honour of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we're going to further examine some of the themes that Dr. King spoke about: racial inequality, economic inequality, and the criminal justice system. Ahead of a new performance of a new project by Modus Theatre that's happening for Martin Luther King Jr. Day later this evening, we're going to hear from someone who is formerly incarcerated in Colorado. He's going to be performing his own story, his own personal monologue, as part of the new Justice Stories from the Front Lines of the Criminal Justice System project. That's going to be performed this evening at the Dairy Arts Centre in Boulder for Martin Luther King Jr. Day, but we'll hear more from him. That's coming up at 8:35. Well, recently a group of former graduate students who attended the University of Denver Corbell School of International Studies wrote to the school's dean asking for debt relief. The students cited the fact that the school recently reduced the cost of a master's degree. Now, one of the students who signed the letter is Jeannie Crump. She graduated in 2016 from the Joseph Corbell School of International Studies.
About 120 recent Corbell alumni have signed on to a letter to the dean of the Joseph Corbell School requesting a refund of roughly $30,000 each, which amounts to $15,000 per year in tuition reduction that has recently been made. And so there's a cohort of us that are requesting a refund based on the fact that we feel like our degrees were extremely overvalued because of the fact that the tuition was so drastically reduced, and the substance of the degree hasn't really changed.
So this relates to this recent announcement that there was a decision by the administration at Corbell to lower the number of credits that's required to graduate with a master's degree. This essentially means that the school's tuition has been lowered from $53,000 a year to $38,000 a year per student. But you're saying now that there are so many students who graduated under the initial terms of the master's degree, and you're looking for, I suppose, some compensation, I suppose, or a reduction in the debt that you now owe to get the same degree.
Right, exactly. And I think you know, there has been a change, as you said, in the amount of credit hours that is now required to complete the master's degree. But I think the basis of it is that students will still come out of the Corbell School with the same master's degree that we did. And yes, we are very excited for future students to have a lower tuition rate and therefore lower debt. But our argument is that nothing really substantially changed in the essence of the program or the quality of the program. And the value of our degrees will still be the same in the workplace and in the workforce moving forward. So we feel like it was very overvalued at our time at Corbell.
Give us a sense of your own personal situation. How much debt are you carrying and what does that debt mean for you now that you are a graduate?
Yeah, so I won't state the exact amount, but you can amount it to me paying off a house in the United States solely from my master's degree at Corbell. And it's, I think, fair to say up front that, yes, it was solely my decision. Of course, I was not forced into getting a master's degree. But I will say that, it was a strategic and professional decision to hopefully pursue the career that I wanted. I was lucky enough to not have much student debt from my undergraduate degree, which was at a public university in state where I grew up. But I have carried debt since my bachelor's degree just to pay for some tuition and for living expenses. And so the master's degree now from Corbell is the equivalent to paying off a house, which means that I will not be owning an actual house anytime in the near future.
Now, this is really part of the larger issue of student debt, which many people, including the folks like yourself who signed this letter, have described as a crisis, and it's completely unsustainable. Because as you said, many people are carrying what's the equivalent debt would be if they were to buy a house. It's like a mortgage. And what that does is then that stops people from actually moving forward and maybe purchasing a house or making other life decisions. What role do you think that colleges and universities have to play in the student debt situation?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, you know, one of the driving factors behind this action that we've all taken is to just bring an awareness to this crisis of student debt and really ask the administration of these institutions to deeply consider how they can be more fair and more just to the students and alumni. We do understand that, you know, this is the society we live in. The student debt crisis in America is it affects everyone, and the system, the higher education system in America, is broken. So we are really trying to shed light on that, and in this way, directly bringing this issue to the administration, we're hoping that we can ask our own institutions, even if they are motivated by profit, to be more equal and to be more fair.
Have you had any reaction, any response from the dean?
We have. So I understand that the issue a response to current Corbell students. In which he did state that the tuition changes involved a shift from the 72 to 60 credit hours for the master's program, and you know the tuition reduction was made in a hopes to make the program more accessible to more students, to promote inclusivity, and the realities of the marketplace, which we fully understand. We did all get a great education, so we're rooted in the reality of the situation. But this cry for justice of some sort is really around a larger issue of trying to bring awareness to how exploitative higher education institutions can be.
That's Jeannie Crump. She graduated in 2016 from the Joseph Corbell School of International Studies at the University of Denver. One of the former grad students that have written to the dean of the school asking for a reduction in their debt. This is in the wake of the school actually reducing the cost of a master's program. Well, Erica Hepburn graduated from Corbell in 2015, and she says she had a wonderful education there, but the cost of it is really impacting her life.
I could very well tear up talking about it. The master's degree specifically for me required that I accrue well over $150,000 in debt, and I had to take out private loans and the federal loans. And for me, making a job for much of my career thus far, I've been making probably $2,700 a month, whereas my loan payments per month were about $1,000 of that. So more than a third of my income was going to my student loans. And that's been incredibly difficult. And I have not, it's impacted my personal relationships, asking for money, relying on people. I've been working two jobs. Up until I just very, very recently got a raise and promotion that helps make things a little bit better, but even with that, I'm just barely making all of the payments on my loans per month. So it's very deeply impacted me to physical implications, the stress of knowing that I can't pay all of my bills every month and having to pick and choose what bills I will pay, or having to ask a family member or my partner for money again, just feeling like a constant burden to other people. And it's been a very difficult weight to carry. And there are lots of implications to all of those other things, but I think it's longer than we have time for right now.
Now, this is something that's playing out at third level institutions, whether they're private ones like the University of Denver or public ones. It really doesn't matter. People are taking on a huge amount of debt to fund their education. And as you said, it's not that you don't appreciate and recognize the value of the education that you've gotten, but just in terms of the actual cost of it, that is just not sustainable. And what would you say to somebody now who's looking at education purely from a cost-benefit analysis? Because that seems to be what needs to happen. If you're going to take on $150,000 worth of debt for education, you can't look at education purely for education's sake. There has to be some cost-benefit analysis there in terms of the kind of industry that you might like to go into. I mean, so what would you say to somebody who might be considering taking on some kind of debt in the current climate, regardless of what school they're going to?
Absolutely. Well, I feel that I'm well positioned to answer that question because my current career directory has actually taken me into higher education. So I feel very passionately about this issue. I received my bachelor's degree from a public state institution where the tuition was very affordable. And then I felt from a lot of the societal pressure around me that I needed a master's degree that was highly ranked. And that is why I went to the University of Denver. Now, working in higher ed and being able to retrospectively look at the public education I received versus the very expensive, highly ranked private education. You know, the faculty were still passionate. The education I received was top tier at both places. So I would say that looking at the cost-benefit analysis is really important when you're looking at your future and the education you pursue. If I were giving advice to someone younger, I would say, look at the public institutions, look at the alternative tracks to taking some of your initial credits at a community college. It is not worth taking on that cost. And from the bachelor's degree I received, I do have a few thousand dollars in debt, but it's in the $20,000 range, and that is from studying abroad. If I had not made that choice, I would have barely any debt from my undergraduate degree. And to me, that was worth the cost. The around $150,000 from the master's degree to me feels honestly absolutely ludicrous.
This letter that you and many others have signed to the dean of the Corbell School at the University of Denver, I mean, what would you hope the broader impact will be, whether or not there will be any personal change and maybe some debt relief in your own personal circumstances? But do you hope this will maybe elicit a broader conversation on all of this?
Yeah, so I feel that by cutting their tuition to such a degree that they have made a statement and they started this conversation by doing something that they had to know would be a little bit controversial. While it is definitely benefiting current students and future students, and I think they had to do this too. I think a lot of universities are seeing recruitment and retention issues right now. I do feel that they were the ones that started this conversation. I feel they have the faculty and the resources, one of the top conflict resolution centers in the country, to have a conversation about this. And this view may not accurately reflect what everyone else who signed that letter believes, but from my personal perspective, I think there are some students who do have the careers that they wanted after graduating, and that I think a fair way of addressing this could be found. And that could be, you know, looking at alumni from the last 5 to 10 years and saying, show us your resume, show us the salary you've been making, what amount of debt did you incur, and let's find a fair way to address this. If you are not in X income bracket after paying X for your degree, then perhaps we find a way to give you a little bit of relief on your loans and have some kind of calculation for that. But I haven't quite figured out what that would be, but it could be a part of the conversation.
Erica Hepburn is one of the former grad students from the University of Denver, Joseph Corbell School of International Studies. A large group of former grad students have written to the dean of the school asking for debt relief in the light of the fact that the school has recently reduced the cost of a master's degree.